This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
All right, it is 5:05 in the evening, and our first story today focuses on visas and travel.
Well, I think we should pack, shouldn't we? If I take that room, you
passport,
take this
Bridget. Room.
Let's go.
Pants.
Come on, Bridget. Let's go.
Pants.
So the Malaysian passport remains the fourth most powerful in Asia, enabling Malaysians to travel to more countries visa-free. According to the rankings published by the Henley Passport Index, holders of Malaysian passports can travel to 179 countries visa-free.
This is an increase from 2018's figure of 166 countries. Malaysia is placed behind Singapore, Japan and South Korea in Asia and is ranked 12th overall in the world out of 199 countries.
South Korea jumped from third place in 2018 to tie with Singapore this year. Although there are more places for Malaysia to visit visa-free, Malaysia's ranking dropped from 10th place in 2018 to 12th. In this year's index, Malaysia is tied at 12th place with Estonia. War-torn countries including Somalia, Syria, Afghanistan and Iraq place 104th place with access to only 30 destinations visa-free. Here's a quick explainer about the varying reasons why certain countries are allowed more visa-free access.
When it comes to international travel, where you're going may not matter as much as where you're coming from. That's because different passports allow varying levels of so-called travel freedom. While some travelers are able to breeze through customs and stay abroad for months or even years, others are subject to expensive visas, strict time limits, or an otherwise heavy vetting process. So why is there this discrepancy? Which countries have the most powerful passports? Well, passports tend to reflect their country's international standing. That is, countries with mostly positive diplomatic relations tend to have more powerful passports because the leaders of those countries have jointly signed on to bilateral visa agreements. For example, Afghan passport holders are extremely limited in where they can travel as the country is embroiled in many international conflicts. But forging friendships with other nations isn't the only way to gain widespread visa-free travel. Some countries, like China, have seen increased travel freedom simply because their citizens have, on average, become wealthier. In 2015, Japan, South Korea, and the United States all eased visa restrictions on Chinese tourists, presumably because of the economic benefits they would likely bring with them. The Passport Index also shows that being a citizen of a global superpower is not all that important to one's travel freedom. In another study of travel freedom, the United States comes in fourth place as relations with countries like Vietnam are still somewhat tense. In the end, a country's travel freedom is hugely important to its citizens. The ability to move freely around the world is often correlated to a person's economic opportunity, upward mobility, and general quality of life. As globalization takes hold, powerful passports are more critical now than ever.
So the HPI report pointed out that Asian countries' continuing dominance of it reflects the extraordinary effect that international mobility and migration has had on the region. The report added that experts anticipate that neither the US nor the EU member states are in line to substantially revise their current visa policies, whereas countries in other parts of Europe, such as citizenship by investment newcomers, Moldova and Montenegro, as well as those in Asia and the Middle East, look set to continue seeking visa waiver agreements with diplomatic allies.
It said that a question mark remains over the ultimate impact of Brexit. While the deal hangs in a balance, it is difficult to anticipate what the ultimate ramifications will be for EU and UK citizens, as well as for EU-UK trade and cooperation. The report noted that insights from the data showed that the ever-growing trend towards visa openness is unlikely to slow down, saying that overall 2019 looks set to hold some surprises in the travel freedom space as more countries and citizens embrace the benefits of global mobility.
The report also pointed out that while in 2006, a citizen on average could travel to 58 destinations without needing a visa from the host nation, by 2018, this number had nearly doubled to 107. I think it's no secret that the Malaysian passport is pretty strong. It's also why...
It gets stolen so much.
That's what I was going to say. It's also why it's involved. It's such a big target for people kind of looking to steal passports and replicate them. But it is worth saying that also, I think, as we move further and further away from requiring visas to visit certain countries, sometimes I have to say that having to pay for a visa in order to enter some countries affects how I feel about it, also affects whether or not I'm as keen on going. I mean, different countries also make that barrier higher or lower. For example, when I visited Nepal last year, more often than not, you'd find that before immigration, there are these long lines waiting to pay for their visa in order to enter the country. And I mean, kudos to them. They have automated kiosks that make it quite easy. But nevertheless, there is still that thing about needing to pay, also needing to pay in a certain denomination like USD, Canadian dollars. They only accept a certain amount of dollars. So yeah, I think it's interesting as we explore this growing trend towards, you know, visa openness among certain countries.
You know, when I read that, I felt like, for me, despite what some news articles and what the news has been generally saying, that perhaps the world is becoming increasingly difficult to travel around because, you know, of more authoritarian regimes like the US, for example, right? It's nice to see that maybe from the end and the perspective of policy and travel, it does seem to be getting easier with the fact that the number of destinations you can go to has doubled since the year 2006.
Let us know what your experiences have been with the Malaysian passport. If you are a Malaysian passport holder, have you found that it does make it quite easy to travel around? Have you found that, you know, if you have to apply for visas in order to enter certain countries, that affects how keen you are on going? Let us know. WhatsApp us your thoughts, 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. Moving on to our next story about pollution.
Hey, look, I don't want any trouble.
And you won't get any. Not from them. Thanks to you and your hacking and smogging and glupping, they can't live here anymore. So I'm sending them off. Hopefully they'll be able to find a better place out there somewhere.
Sangaran Assemblyman Khairuddin A. Rahim is suggesting that Johor could impose special taxes on companies that cause pollution and then use the tax revenue to do good for the environment.
So his comment focuses particularly on water pollution. He said that the revenue could go to environmental restoration work as well as programs to raise awareness. And as for who to tax, Khairuddin told the Malay Mail that it could cover not only companies with wastewater plants and waste disposal industries, but also others that contribute to water pollution, including mining, housing and forestry.
His comments came after the Johor Department of Environment revealed that as of September 2017, the state has 22 rivers categorized as Class 4 under the Interim National Water Quality Standards. Class 4 is the rating for the worst quality in those standards. Khairuddin also proposed for the state government to tighten laws or enactments against environmental pollution and river pollution. He also suggested setting up an action group involving NGOs and environmentalists to tackle the issue.
And then that action group could work together with government departments and other stakeholders, whereby they would be able to play this advisory role by coming up with solutions and monitoring the rivers. And I mean, there's been a lot of attention on holding corporations accountable for their impact on the environment. Here we've got some audio of American environmental activist Bill McKibben addressing some of the ways that we can do so.
We can't let money from PACs, companies and lobbyists dictate the future of our world. We can't let corporate greed dictate the future of our planet. So, what steps can we take? Number one, we need to get money out of politics. I know, this huge problem. But it no longer just threatens our way of life, it threatens life itself. Two, we need tax policies that reflect the real cost of pollution to keep corporations from profiting by destroying the environment. No one's allowed to toss their trash out for free. No one except the fossil fuel industry that pours carbon into the atmosphere as if it were an open sewer. Three, we need to quit rewarding companies that contribute to our climate crisis. Our government spends $20 billion a year on subsidies to fossil fuel companies. That has to stop. And finally, when companies do wrong, we need to get the penalties right. BP Oil was fined $20 billion when it spilled 5 million barrels of oil into the Gulf of Mexico. That's a lot of money, but because of the way U.S. tax laws work, they only had to pay one quarter of that fine. The rest of it, totally tax deductible. BP got to write off $15 billion. You and I shouldn't be picking up the tab for companies that destroy our environment.
So hitting them where it hurts seems to be the approach that's being advocated here by the Assemblyman, Khairuddin A. Rahim. And I believe that as we increasingly look at this conversation about the environment, every time we talk about it, somebody will say, well, look, it's not the daily kind of everyday person and their actions that cause these problems. You know, the scale of the problem tends to be because of corporations, tends to be because of, well, other countries and, yep. You know, us importing the plastic. So it isn't necessarily a singular issue that can be solved just by one person changing their ways. And targeting companies is, to me, a good idea, especially when you consider that it is that we're talking about rivers that are categorized as class four. When we've gotten to that stage, I think something needs to be done.
I think so too. I think it's also very unfair that these corporations can sometimes get away scot-free without, you know, who ends up picking the bill for cleaning up the rivers and who ends up picking up the bill for restoring a forest? It's the government, and it's essentially that's taxpayer money. So we end up paying for, I guess, some of the harms and the short-term profit-making goals of these corporations. And I think maybe the focus on personal responsibility towards the environment, very important, yes. We should use less straws. We should try to use less plastic. We should try to save as much water as you can. But at some point, I think, you know, the more powerful ones have to pick up the bill.
Yeah, I, for the most part, I think that this is going to be something that if it were to come into play, would be broadly supported. I think people are interested in saying, well, look, I think that companies should also have to foot that bill that we heard about from Bill McKibben. And it's, I'm curious to know whether or not, for the most part, people would be supportive of this tax. I suspect that it will gain support, but let us know. Would you support a tax that targeted companies that contribute towards pollution? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. Magnus here on WhatsApp saying, regarding our passport, saying generally positive about international travel. I've been as far as the Cayman Islands without needing a visa. The immigration officer was surprised that Malaysia was in the exemptions, but very annoyed as to why we need to apply for a visa to visit Myanmar. I mean, we provide them jobs, perhaps relatively better standard of living. We invest tremendously in the economy. Pretty unfair, isn't it?
I don't know. Maybe it's the political ties we don't have. I mean, if you've seen the news lately, Tunam hasn't been exactly very friendly towards Myanmar.
Yes, and Myanmar is also in the process of opening up. It's not as if they have been, you know, kind of a free and open country for many, many years. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes, especially since we are neighbours. We are in the same region.
We're in ASEAN together.
Yes, we are. Yeah. Talk to us about your experiences with the Malaysian passport. Have you enjoyed its power? If you have to apply for a visa to get into certain countries, does that affect your decision whether or not to go? Let us know. WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back to talk about parents, kids and technology. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
This is the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin. Earlier, we were speaking about the Malaysian passport and how it is ranked the fourth most powerful in Asia, 10th most powerful worldwide, I think. And we've been asking you whether or not you found that to be the case. Do you agree with that? Have you found that the power of the Malaysian passport has been working in your favor? And also, if you have to apply for a visa to go abroad, do you sometimes, you know, kind of shy away from visiting that country? So eMacro has tweeted us to say, the Malaysian passport powerful days, are they numbered? Along with a link to the fact that Malaysian citizens who plan to visit Europe will need to apply online for an ETIAS visa from the year 2021. And I guess that speaks to what they were saying earlier within the index as well, with things happening with the Brexit, yep, with things happening with within the EU states. It's hard to say, but hopefully things stay open within Asia.
I hope so too. And maybe if we do bolster the ASEAN efforts, maybe we'll be able to travel even more.
We've been talking about having a visa waiver with the United States for you know, kind of a long time now. I wonder what's going on there.
I don't know what the last update was, but yeah, I really don't know. I have to read up on that.
Yeah, because I think they're saying that in terms of visa approvals from Malaysia, it's upwards of, I can't remember the exact number, but I know it's in the 90 percentile. So, I mean, we're almost there, but now there's still that thing about having to actually go physically apply, pay for it, as opposed to what a visa waiver program would allow. Anyway, let us know your experiences with the Malaysian passport, as well as applying for visas to travel abroad. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. In our next story, we are taking a look at the perennial debate surrounding kids and technology.
Your children! Why do you all need cell phones?
Safety!
Emergency!
Safety! Educational!
Could you at least set them to vibrate?
So if you're a parent, you've probably experienced despair when you saw your kid glued to their smartphone. Now, philosophy professor Jordan Shapiro has a radical proposal. He thinks that you should rejoice rather than despair. And better yet, you should join in.
So the assistant professor of philosophy at Temple University presents his case in the book The New Childhood, Raising Kids to Thrive in a Connected World. According to Shapiro, kids aren't losing themselves in their devices. Rather, they're potentially finding themselves. In fact, they're doing exactly what generations of kids have long done, which is to immerse themselves in the toys and objects of the moment that reflect the society they inhabit, and in turn, this will help prepare them for the future. I think we wanted to talk about this particularly because we spoke yesterday about how due to the dual language program textbook situation, teachers in the DLP schools are being forced to use the tech that they had from the PPSMI days in order to teach, and they're seeing very engaged kids. And so there is an argument, I think, to be made here for, hey, look, this is a brand new world and we're just going to have to join them and not try and beat it.
So anyway, with regards to parental participation, the philosopher encourages parents to dive into tech headlong with their kids, be it video games or social media. A quote from Shapiro says that your job as a parent is not to stop unfamiliar tools from disrupting your nostalgic image of the ideal childhood. That is really something to think about, right? To the point that, you know, you as a parent, maybe you're unfamiliar with the new tools that are coming out, and then...
You know, all I can hear in my head is parents saying to their kids, you know, kids these days, you have the tablet. When I was a child, I had a stick and a rock, and those were my friends, and I had a great time. And it's true. I think we always, memory does this, right? We idealize, we make things nostalgic and beautiful. Yeah. But the truth is, I mean, even if you were a kid growing up whenever, and even if you had a great childhood, if somebody had plopped in from the future, handed you a tablet, you would have been glued to it. You're not
You would have made the
kids.
Same choice your child would have, is making today.
I think so. So here's Shapiro elaborating on this point.
You know, I don't think that people adequately consider the degree to which childhood itself is a product of the technologies and the economy in which kids live. So when I think about what childhood looks up like in the future, I think it's really important to separate what's simply just trends that are related, like fashion, related to the times, related to the materials, and what's actually essential. See, we're always trying to preserve these sort of essential parts of childhood, the kind of childhood play. But play, as we imagine it, the kind of play that happens in childhood, is really a post-Victorian invention. I mean, you know, it's only in the industrial era that we start to have this notion of home, where children are safe, where they're allowed to express themselves, and out there, the outer world, which is somehow dangerous and extreme. As technology changes our lives, that there's no longer a distinction between home and work, I think it's really interesting to think about, what does it mean to be a child? What does it mean to be part of a family? What does it mean to be a son in a world that has changed so drastically?
So this is a rather fresh perspective on the issue in this moment, where it almost feels dangerous to put technology and kids in the same sentence. Shapiro also says that he believes Plato would have been a gamer. And that, after all, life is always lived through the tools of the times. They help to mediate our relationship with the world around us, and they ease the strain between inner and outer realities.
Now, of course, there is good reason for parents to be concerned about the effects of too much screen time. Apps, video games, social media platforms, they're all designed by adults who are really working to profit from maximizing every customer's attention, including kids. And research has also shown that a generation of children who grew up on tech are now experiencing more mental health issues compared to those of earlier generations who grew up without.
Work is 24/7, in part because of the nature of jobs, and in part because they find it increasingly hard to divorce themselves from their devices. BuzzFeed reporter Anne Helen Peterson says that this has led to an epic burnout among millennials. Other studies have also found that many kids are extreme internet users, and extreme internet use may have harmful effects. Devices also mess with sleep, which is crucial for children.
So I think the key thing for me to take away from this is Jordan Shapiro's point about diving in with your children, because I think it's very difficult to stand outside of technology and say to your child, like, hey, don't use that. Or yep. if you're not understanding how they are engaging with the technology, also if you're not observing your own habits, I do think children very often mirror. But if you don't understand what it is that's enticing your child to become an extreme internet user, for example, how are you going to help them set those boundaries, right? Like, if you don't actually join in the situation, if you're standing outside and saying, well, I mean, how is this different from television in my day? It's not the same, you know, the interactivity, all of it is different. And if you don't immerse yourself in it, you're not going to get it.
I think this ties in nicely with our conversation yesterday about social media etiquette as well. And perhaps parents, and the call was for parents and teachers and lecturers to be able to teach their kids or their students to be more ethical and more polite online. But if I think sometimes what parents sometimes do is that, hey, why are you hurt by those words that some stranger on the internet, perhaps living 1,000 kilometers away, you don't even know? But I think if you experience that yourself, you can understand and empathize with how painful that can actually be.
That's the thing. So much of it depends on that immersion, and that immersion creates understanding. Yeah. I think if you don't have that, if you're not somebody who, I mean, I didn't even grow up on social media, but it doesn't mean that I don't understand it, right? And you have to have some measure of understanding, or you're not really going to be able to help your kids navigate through the thicket of what the internet actually is. Let us know whether you agree with this. I mean, so just to reiterate, philosophy professor Jordan Shapiro has said that rather than despair when it comes to seeing your child glued to their smartphone, you should join in their world and try to understand it, because they're potentially finding themselves rather than losing themselves in these devices. Do you agree? Especially if you're a parent, let us know. WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. We have gotten a number of messages. Earlier, we were talking about the strength of the Malaysian passport. And we've got two people weighing in here. CO saying, amazed that we continue to pay yearly upward rising visa fees for India, considering the amount of jobs we provide for them here in Malaysia and in their home country from investments.
Which ties in nicely with a tweet we received from Sandeep Sidhu. Visa waiver for traveling to India should be implemented, looking at our Indian community here in Malaysia.
And we've also got this message regarding the passport from Suna. Saying, I believe having a Malaysian passport is definitely a true privilege. When I was studying in Germany back in 2009, traveling to European cities without needing a visa was surely a happy meal to all Malaysians. Since being a student, you want to travel, but you want to travel cheap. Also, when I did a solo travel to Perth, Australia, the officer at the boarding gate told me, if you're a Malaysian, not too much trouble. They usually let you pass easily, and that's because of the strength of our passport. And when I traveled to Nepal, I was told by one of the Sherpas that Malaysian passport costs minimum 10K in the black market, so it sure holds the highest or strongest values. Of course, paying for a visa would affect one decision to travel there or not. I had to pay 700 ringgit plus for US visas due to the large currency gap. And if it's not because of my sister's graduation day, perhaps I wouldn't be going. So just my 2 cents. And that came through from Sue Natasha.
Yeah, cost is definitely a huge factor when it comes to being able to travel. And that if there's a barrier, like, you know, having to pay for an expensive visa, yeah, you're not going to go there.
Ratna here. Yes, it's very useful to have a Malaysian passport. My Cambodian colleague had to fill up tons of paperwork to get his Netherlands visa. We have limited visa-free stay. Good rate. It's like this for most of the countries I have visited. Continue to let us know your experience with our strong passport. Does having a visa or having to purchase a visa, apply for a visa, does that affect your decision to go to specific countries? Also, let us know about, you know, kind of participating with your kids on the internet. Do you think it's a good thing? That number to WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. Right now, we are headed to the news. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Building fit Malaysians. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin, and it's that time of night where we kind of take to the streets and hear what people have to say about a story that we covered a little bit earlier. Today, it was about the fact that the Malaysian passport is pretty powerful. It's the fourth most powerful in Asia. It's the 10th most powerful, 12th, sorry.
12th most powerful.
Yes, 12th most powerful, and that's according to an index that came out. And this is based on the fact that, you know, how many countries can we visit? How many countries can we visit visa-free? And so we've been asking you as well, what are your thoughts on this? We had quite a few messages come in earlier about whether or not having to apply for a visa would actually affect your decision to go to a country or not. Also, have you enjoyed traveling with the stronger Malaysian passport? So Chris on Twitter says, so what if our passports are powerful? The ringgit is weak. You can't go anywhere.
True law. Chuti Malaysia only lah. Right,
I guess. Well, I mean, that's, yes, that's one kind of slightly downbeat way of looking at it. But we did kind of go out and ask people what they thought, and here's what they had to say.
What countries do you think you can visit with your passport?
Malaysian passport. I know all the Commonwealth country. Europe, I think, yeah. Definitely not States. Right, and I think most of the countries, Israel, of course, not. That's it, I guess, mostly, yeah.
I think that's quite a lot. I heard that Malaysian passport is quite strong in the sense that you don't need visa to go to a lot of countries.
I have a South African passport because I'm South African. Traveling in Asia with South African passport is pretty easy. So it's either no visa for 30 days or 60 days, whichever country I'm going to.
I have an Indian passport. So Indian passports are really pretty weak. So whichever country you visit, typically you would need a visa because typically these are reciprocative, right? If you need to visit India, most of the passports you need a visa. So it works the other way around as well.
Does the passport ranking match your own experiences in travelling and obtaining visas for certain countries? Have you ever had difficulty getting a visa?
Yeah, of course. I mean, if you go to UAE, we have applied for visa in advance. Also, if we go to the Schengen countries, like many countries in Europe that are within the Schengen scope, we have to apply for the Schengen visa so you can move from France to Switzerland or from Belgium. You know, all those Schengen countries.
I haven't been travelling for a while. But so far, the one I went in Europe, I don't need passport, so it kind of like make it easier for me. But I just came back from China, so we do need a passport, but it's not that difficult to get. Just have to go register.
Yeah, I think so far, I mean, I haven't been traveled throughout the world, but so far, it's quite okay experience in terms of getting visa and like traveling around Southeast Asia, and like there's basically no issue at all. It's just, yeah.
When you find that you need a visa to travel to a specific country, does that affect your decision?
If it's like a leisure trip, probably I might change my decision. But however, if it's I required to be there, then I guess no choice.
No, normally if it's a business travel, you have no choice, right? So you have to endure the process of application. But of course, if you become a bit, you know, critical and say, if I'm traveling for my own pleasure, do I really want to go through such a very complex process of trying to get a visa? If I can go to another country like Singapore, Thailand or Indonesia, why I don't really need a visa, right? So like now there's a long weekend, so I would not want to worry about a country where I need a visa to travel for a long weekend holiday, right? So you want something that can happen and happen now quickly, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that will stop me from traveling if unless you have to register for a visa. Yeah, but sometimes it depends if it's such a hassle, but so far I haven't had any issues applying. So yeah, it depends. Maybe it depends where you go.
It doesn't turn me off. So I like traveling, so I would do the hard work to get the visa.
When choosing travel destinations, are visa restrictions a concern?
I would say personal preference still play a bigger role. But however, it's, you know, it's like a two-pick-one kind of situation, and that's one country and need visa, the other one and don't need, then probably it will be a deciding factor.
Of course, I think countries with less restriction on visa, they greatly open business, they greatly open tourism also, because tourists want very similar type of immigration processes to wherever that they're going, right? So if you know that the immigration process is too complex, why do you want to spend your time going through such a complex process, you know?
For Indians, I think Indonesia is one of the countries where we don't need a visa. So if I'm based here, traveling to a Bali is really convenient, so it definitely helps.
The visa is kind of just, you know, an inconvenient step as opposed to like something that would deter you.
If it's a bit tedious for me to get a visa, I might affect my decision. But it depends. If I really want to go somewhere, I will just try my best and do it, you know, if it's in my bucket list, right? If there's less restriction, there's more chances for us to go travel, yeah, I think maybe it might let me like plan more than before if I have the time to go travel. Travel!
So those were just some thoughts from around Tamantun, basically, about the strength of the Malaysian passport. If you've got any thoughts, you can send them in. That number is 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll have more tunes coming your way. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.